Welcome to Rough Drafts, How God Writes His Love in Our Stories, a podcast that explores the faith journeys of our friends and neighbors in Burns, Tennessee. Everyone has a story to tell, and in this podcast, we'll hear powerful and inspiring stories of how God works in the ordinary lives of people like you and me. Our stories are unfinished and perfectly imperfect. They are just rough drafts, a glimpse of what is to come because God is still at work, writing plot twists, introducing new characters, and bringing good even from the most challenging circumstances. Join us as we see what God is up to in our stories. Here's your host, Matthew Hyatt.
Oh no. No. I've made a mistake. I've done 60-something episodes, and I start them all by saying nice things about the person I'm talking to. So that means I have to do that again today, I guess. So here's what I'll say about today's guest. When she's not like dominating basketball or trying to cure cancer, I want her to speak at my funeral because I want to put her in a position where she has to say nice things about me when I'm dead and very possibly cry in public. That's my final shot to you. So today's guest, have I said enough? She is Dan's babysitter, and she tries to keep her clan in check. It is Brittany Calloway. Welcome.
Hello, Matthew. I can't believe that was actually really nice.
You like that?
Yeah.
I had Leslie write it.
Oh, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense.
I should have had Dan write it.
Ooh, there's no telling what he would have said.
Okay, let's just jump in. Okay. Is it true you only married Dan for his Mustang?
I plead the fifth.
So yes. Okay. I think that's it, folks. Thanks for listening today. It's been a good week. Well, Brittany, we've known you. You guys have been at Burns
since 2015.
Years. Seven, eight. Go. Wow.
Yeah.
8 years.
Yeah.
That's math.
Almost nine.
9 years.
Almost.
Good
nine.
Grief. Time flies. I remember we got to spend your first anniversary with you guys. I think it was your first, wasn't it? Second. At an incredibly romantic restaurant in White Bluff. We went to McDonald's after church one Sunday night. Like, wait, this is your anniversary?
Yeah.
And you're eating with us at McDonald's in White Bluff?
Yep.
Well, and you're
that
still
happened.
Married.
So. We are still married.
I owe Leslie $20 on that. So
wow. it's just 20?
Well, I didn't want to put a whole lot on the game. All right, friends. Well, this is our month of Britneys. So I forget whose idea. Do you remember who said we should do the month of Britneys?
It was either you or me, and we just kind of fed off of each other and just rolled with it.
And when I sent the mass text to all of the Britneys, I'm like, there's no way they're going to all say yes. But I guess there was peer pressure
or
something.
Yes.
Because you have not particularly wanted to do this.
I mean, it hasn't been on the top of my list.
Well, that's okay.
You know.
It's always a little bit awkward to sit in front of a microphone and tell your stuff.
Yeah.
So, what's your story?
Well, my story starts in Knoxville, Tennessee, fitting for the UT lover, right?
Okay.
So that's where I was born. Dad was there at UTK getting his master's. And then when he finished that, he moved mom and I up to Indiana. And we were in Indiana for 8 years. My brother came along then. And while we were there in Indiana, you know, I grew up in COC. But I grew up in the very conservative COC background. We were there every time the doors opened, every Sunday morning, night, Wednesday night, anytime there was a gospel meeting, we were there. We dressed up, you know, it was a, don't do this, stay away from this kind of, it felt a little more of a fear-based, you know?
Yeah.
Didn't really talk much about, you know, Holy Spirit and the grace and kind of the, what COC gets the bad rep for is kind of how I grew up.
Yeah.
Didn't have a lot of opportunities to go to church camps. I don't think I ever went to a church camp growing up. It was just, we would go to church. Mm-hmm. But I think also at the same time, my journey with God is also paralleled with my journey in sports.
Okay.
you know, I am just a huge sports lover.
So we're going to call this episode Dropkick Me Jesus Through the Goalposts of Life.
I mean, sure, why not?
Okay.
Sure, why not, you know. I really started my sports journey there in Indiana. My very first sport was Taekwondo. I did it with Dad. We did it for several years. He and I would go off to tournaments, and we'd come home with all these trophies and medals that we didn't expect to win, you know. And we reached the status of a first and black belt. First degree is what that means. And so loved doing that. It was fun. And then next sport was swimming. Not outside. You know, with the red hair, we don't really like the sun that much. So was an indoor swimmer and swam for a long time at a club in Indiana. And then, of course, with Dad being a big baseball player, I played t-ball with the boys and baseball and everything. And that led into softball. And so then after 8 years, well, actually, no, before that, one summer, one of my friends said, hey, come to this sports camp with me. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Let's go. Let's do it. Wound up being a basketball camp. And the coach that put it on called my parents and said, your daughter has untapped potential. I want her to try out for my travel ball team. Are you interested? Sure, why not? Let's do it.
Yeah, we'll get her out of the house a little.
Yeah, good. Right, right. We need another outlet of the energy. So went and tried out and made it. Made the travel ball team. And then went and tried out for my school team. Made it. And that's kind of where my basketball journey started. I was in the fifth grade. I was late. I was a late bloomer when it comes to basketball. After fifth grade, we moved from Indiana to Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And that was, what, 98, 99, something like that. One of those years. Well, that was when the Lady Vols had a perfect season. And that was big deal for me because their point guard was my favorite player and I watched her constantly. And so I kind of took her work ethic, her shot, things like that, and I mimicked it for my own. And so I tried out for my school team in Murfreesboro. I made it. I found a travel ball team, tried out for that. I made it. And then also tried out for the softball team and made it. So I was on three different teams going into the sixth grade. It's a lot.
Yeah, sounds you busy.
It was a lot. Oh, yeah, I was busy. So I just essentially worked and just got better those first 2 years in Murfreesboro. And then eighth grade year was kind of when things kind of turned. And we had a good team. We had a good school team. And we wound up winning state.
Oh, cool.
And I was on the all-state tournament team and everything and was thinking, hey, maybe I can do this in high school. Little did I know, the high school coach was like, yeah, you're already on the freshman team.
Oh.
Yeah. So when school basketball was over after we won state, travel ball started and softball started at the same time. So during one game of softball, I was on third, ran home, slid into home, twinged my knee. Nice. Didn't feel good. Still able to walk, you know. It's fine. Well, that night, had travel basketball practice. Went in practice. One of my teammates went up for a rebound, kicked her leg out as she got the ball, hit me right in that same knee.
Ugh.
Twinged a little again, and I was like, eh, I'm fine. Kept playing. Next morning, can't move.
Yeah.
Knee is so swollen. And it's hot, and I've got this little purple spot on the side of my knee. Mom calls the doc. Doc's like, eh, sounds like a spider bite. You know, do this, 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 and this. Call us back if it doesn't get better.
Yeah.
Didn't get better. Next morning, I can't even wiggle my toes without immense pain.
Okay.
Something real, real bad is happening.
Real, real bad. Is that so the mom, medical diagnosis?
Yeah.
You got the bill, and it said real, real bad.
Real, real bad. So mom was like, we're going to the doc, puts me in the car, calls doc, says, we're coming. Be ready.
Yeah.
So we go. Doc looks at it. He's like, yeah, let's drain it. So he sticks this big old nice long needle in my knee, and he drains 60 cc's of this rust-colored grossness. That is also the official medical diagnosis for that, too.
Can that be the title of this episode, Rust Colored Grossness?
Sure, why not?
Do you have a picture of that we can put with this?
I don't think so.
Thank the Lord.
I don't think so. So he says, Doc says, yeah, we're going to admit you to the hospital. We've got to clean this out. You've got some kind of infection in your knee. So on my 14th birthday, had my very first knee surgery. And after knee surgery, Doc comes to me and he's telling me what all happened. And he said, after we put you under, I took a Sharpie and I put an X on your knee where I wanted to put my scope. And just by the pressure of doing that, your knee exploded.
Oh, wow.
So I have this very long scar down my knee where my knee exploded and all of this infection came out.
Yeah.
Sounds great, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I was in the hospital for a whole entire week, making sure I didn't go septic. It turned out to be strep, which is interesting. You'd think staph, but it was strep. So recovered from all of that as I'm entering into freshman year, trying to, you know, get back in shape, get my knee movement and everything back. And so freshman year starts and I have decided that I'm not going to play softball anymore.
Okay.
I think I broke my dad's heart.
Aww.
But it was basketball for me.
Yeah.
You know, basketball is my love. And so I was still on my travel ball team and then playing for the school. So it was a 24/7, 365. There was not a break. Once school ball ended, travel ball started. Once travel ball stopped, school ball started. So it was constant. So freshman year kind of went by uneventful. I, you know, started for my freshman team, dressed out for varsity, never played for varsity my freshman year, just kind of got that experience of, you know, how high school ball worked. Sophomore year was different. Sophomore year going into it, I had twisted my ankle during travel ball, and so I was trying to recover from that. And so I worked, Dad and I would work doing sprints, jumping, exercises, things like that to get me back in shape, and wound up halfway through sophomore year starting for the high school team.
Okay.
Sadly, it did not end the way we wanted it to. We actually lost in the first round of district. Was very disappointed in that.
Well, that's closer to the state than I ever made it.
Yeah, right.
go chess team.
Yeah. But then travel ball started, and we had a good team.
Yeah.
Easily a top three team I played on. We were just good.
Yeah.
We were good and we beat a lot of people. And our travel ball team was good enough to be nationally ranked. Oh, and cool. We went to the national championship and we were just beating people and sadly lost by, like, I think it was 2 and wound up placing 5th in the nation.
Oh, wow.
Have this giant medal from it. That was probably one of my favorite teams to be on.
Yeah.
So then going into junior year, we have a decent high school team, but a few games into the season, one of the opponents that I set a screen on, she hit only my knee that I had had that surgery on. And I looked down and my kneecap is almost on the side of my knee.
It's definitely not supposed to do that.
It's not where it's supposed to be. So had to, you know, obviously go to the doctor. He said, we've got to fix this. So another knee surgery, second knee surgery happens. And I asked Doc, because this is junior year of high school, this is a pivotal time for recruiting if I'm going to play in college.
Right.
And I said, am I going to be able to recover enough to finish playing the end of the year? He said, depends on you and how hard you work and how you recover. So we had the knee surgery. I miss most of junior year, and I was in the physical therapy office 3 days a week, and when I wasn't in there, I was in the athletic training room rehabbing. And I was able to make it back for the very last regular season game of the year. Now, I did not play in it, but I dressed out, went through warm-ups, you know, just to see how the knee did. So we go into district. Our team is like 4th in the district. You know, we were decent, but not game busters. We actually wound up winning district.
Okay.
Very big surprise.
Yeah.
Go to regionals, win a couple games in regionals, and then we lose to an eventual team that went to state. And I think they played in the state tournament championship game.
Yeah.
So that next night after our loss was the regional championship game, and I was going to go and didn't make it.
Okay.
Never made it to the game. Got in a car accident. And got hit in my driver's side door.
Okay.
And a laundry list of injuries ensued. And so, the main ones being my pelvis. I fractured my pelvis like a Christmas tree, according to the doc. And then lacerated my spleen. My ribs were wrecked. And then had bad concussion, which the concussion led to me not remembering things. And so I don't remember 2 weeks before the accident or 2 days after the accident.
Really?
Yeah. So me coming back from my knee surgery and helping my team win district, I don't remember any of it.
Oh, that stinks.
I have these plaques of me being on these tournament teams that I cannot remember winning. Wow. I've watched the film of us playing. I know that it's me there. I can see myself, but yeah. I can't remember any of it.
So, you know, I know your parents, Todd and Kathy, and I like them a lot.
Yeah, me too.
Do you think that they took advantage of this as an opportunity to present and plant false memories for you, like telling you that you were really actually from Hawaii or that, you know, you were a slave once? Or,
I mean, I would expect my brother to do that, not them.
I'm kind of disappointed that they didn't, because, like, I'm writing this down. If, God forbid, this happens to one of the kids, like, we definitely use this as an opportunity. You don't remember when Daddy was president?
Right.
You know, it was for 2 weeks in your junior year.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Okay. So that's a weird experience.
It is. It really is, not being able to remember. But it also is a blessing because I don't remember the accident. You know, so I don't essentially have that fear of driving.
Yeah, because that could have jacked you up.
That could have been, yeah, that could have been real bad.
Yeah, I don't think people sometimes appreciate just how much God has done some cool things the way he's made the brain. Mm-hmm. And one of the brain's trauma responses is get rid of it.
Yes.
And the number of people who, you know, experience sexual abuse or a traumatic accident or something like that, who literally don't have memory of it. Steve's podcast episode, he talked about, like, he did not remember these things, but later he put together the pieces and realized.
Right.
I used to hear that and think, well, you know, that's not credible. If they don't remember it, but no, like, God really gave us brains that shut off on some stuff so that those things don't kill us.
Yes.
And that's pretty cool.
And I'll gladly give up not remembering playing sports and stuff for not remembering that accident and having that fear of driving.
Yeah. I'm fairly confident women don't remember giving birth or else there wouldn't be second children anywhere. Like, I think there's actually some studies that indicate, like, there's some things that happen to the brain that make you forget some things.
I mean, I remember giving birth, but mine's going to be different because I didn't go natural.
Yeah.
So, you know. But yeah, I mean, the first thing I remember is waking up in the hospital and Britney Spears' song was playing on the radio and I asked the nurse to turn it because I didn't want to listen to Britney Spears.
So you were still in your right mind.
Yeah. Okay. but essentially I had to, you know, that recovery took me a while because I had to essentially relearn how to walk and run with that pelvis.
Did they have to do more surgeries after
no,
that?
No. They didn't want to.
Yeah.
They wanted to see if it would kind of heal on its own because it wasn't a full break. It was a lot of fractures, though.
Yeah.
So they were also a little concerned if I would ever be able to have kids, give birth, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know? I was like, you know what? That's an issue for later because we're not thinking about that right now.
We'll
We've
cross
got
that
sports.
Bridge. Yeah.
We're in a sports mind, not baby mind, you know. So I did a lot of intense physical therapy. I was in a wheelchair for a little bit while it healed and then on crutches for a long time, it felt like.
Yeah.
And then finally I was kind of able to go to one crutch and then go back to able to walk and run. And so I had to relearn that form, you know. So I missed a little bit of travel ball because of that. Was not really in any kind of shape probably to go back. I probably should have just kind of skipped that that last year of travel ball and just worked on getting back in shape, because going into senior year, you know, I mean, I had gotten, you know, recruited. I had gotten a lot of letters from a lot of colleges and everything, had gone on visits to schools and stuff, you know. So, you know, it was a big possibility for me. But then senior year, you know, I mean, I'm playing, getting back at it, and then playing against a rival, and a pop happens in that same knee that I'd already had two knee surgeries on. And I wound up tearing my ACL.
Mm-hmm.
And so we go to the doc, and he at first didn't think that I tore anything because my leg was so strong, because it's on the same leg and same side that I had fractured my pelvis. So I had been working that side of my body.
All those support muscles were carrying that.
Yes. So he, at first he didn't think, but then the MRI confirmed it, like, rolled up.
Yeah.
You couldn't even see it. So he was like, there's a possibility that you can play on it without your ACL. We'll put you in a brace. Let's do, you know, a couple weeks of rehab, of doing specific movements and stuff. And then if you're good and we feel like you're you can do this, well, you can go back and play with no ACL. Sold. Wrong choice.
Yeah.
So I did that and went back and played. And I think it was like the second game that I played in, I felt this another tear.
Mm.
And I was done. Like, I couldn't put my toes down. I was done. I just essentially limped off the court, went out of the arena, and went to the stairs and sat there.
Yeah.
And Dad came out, and he came and sat beside me, and I was like, I'm done. I was like, I tore something else. I knew I did. So we went to the doctor, tore my medial and lateral meniscus. Big tear. Big support, you know, there in your knee. So had a big surgery, had to repair medial and lateral meniscus, and then we actually used a cadaver for my ACL. And I was done. So high school ball's over. There's no more travel ball. You know, you don't have travel ball after senior year of high school. So I'm essentially done. And pretty much all of the recruits that I had, went away when I had my wreck. They were pretty much gone after ACL tear.
Yeah.
You know, three surgeries.
You're damaged goods now.
Yeah, essentially I am. Except for one coach. I had one junior college coach that had watched some of my film and was going to take a chance on me.
Okay.
He came to the house. He asked how recovery was going, if I wanted to continue to play and everything, and I told him absolutely. And so he gave me a shot, and he offered me a scholarship, and I jumped at it.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to let it go. It was my only opportunity to keep playing. So I went JUCO, went to Roan State Community College in tiny town of Harriman, Tennessee.
Yeah.
And loved every minute of it.
Okay.
I, freshman year, just worked on trying to get back from that ACL, trying to get the fear aspect out of your head, you know, of, you know, you jump stop and you tear your ACL, that affects people.
Yeah, it's funny, like, as I've gotten older, I don't trust my body as much as I used to. And, like, you know, the stuff that we did as kids, you know, now that we've hurt ourselves enough times doing stuff like that, mm-hmm. like, it's just, it takes some time after you hurt yourself to trust again.
Yeah, so I mean, I essentially had 6 months of trying to recover. And so that's 6 months of, you know, me getting out of shape.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have to work on getting back in shape. And I've got this big old huge knee brace I got to wear and everything. And so trying to get used to that, and how do I move? How do I go side to side in this big old brace? So I essentially spent all of freshman year trying to figure that out.
Mm.
Sophomore year, we had a pretty decent team. And so, you know, I started, and, you know, we didn't really win anything.
Yeah.
But me playing that sophomore year caught the attention of another coach. And with JUCO, you only are there for 2 years.
Right.
So if I didn't have another coach that was interested in me, I was done playing.
Right.
And so another coach, I caught his eye. He recruited me, and I was like, sure, if you want me to come play, I'll come play. So I signed again, got another basketball scholarship to go play at Tennessee Wesleyan College in Athens, Tennessee. Yep.
And that's where our paths cross, and we don't know it.
That's right.
That's mom's family is from the next town over, Inglewood.
Yeah, Inglewood.
Athens, yep. Home of Mayfield Dairy.
That's
the
right.
World's best chocolate milk.
That is very true.
Yep. That's where they'd go to Walmart.
There's a little place over there in Athens where you just go, and that's essentially all that's there is Mayfield's ice cream, and I'd been there several times.
It's one of the better places on earth.
Yes. Yep. So,
another small town Dixon thing, by the way, Doug Couch's family, Doug Couch, the preacher at White Bluff, is also from that area. He's on the next side of town. It's Madisonville.
Oh, yeah.
A few years ago, I preached a meeting up there for him and his parents. And
that's cool.
That church is where my grandparents went to church.
Oh,
just
okay.
Crazy small world.
It is.
Yeah, you can't talk about anybody.
No, you cannot. And it's, 3.5 hours away from here. And, who would have thunk it?
You can't get there from here.
No, you can't. There's a lot of different interstates you gotta take. But Tennessee Wesleyan was probably one of the better decisions that I made. That's where I should have been.
Yeah.
Essentially the entire time.
Yeah.
But junior year started, and first day of practice, we're going in and we're practicing, and I tear my knee again. And I knew it. I knew it as soon as I did it that it was toast.
Yeah.
And tore my medial meniscus again. So I had to go to the team doc. He was like, you've got to keep your meniscus as long as you can because it's the cushion. And I was like, okay. So he repaired it, and I'm out the entire junior year. One thing that's cool about college, though, is you get a red shirt.
Yeah.
So I redshirted.
Okay.
And took that entire year to essentially recover and then try to get back in shape and everything.
Yeah.
So red shirt junior year starts, and, our team is decent. We're not, gangbusters or anything. We're not championship worthy, essentially. But we decided to play together at the right time and went through conference and through the conference tournament and won.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. One also cool thing about college is when you win your conference, you get a championship ring.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I got a championship ring.
Okay.
And right before tournament started, I got a nice elbow to the face. And my nose was essentially pointing about 30 degrees to the right. And big old black eyes and everything. Nice concussion. Nice headaches. Oh, yeah. It was great. And probably one of the most weird experiences I'd ever had. I went to the ENT. And I said, Doc, you've got to go ahead and set this. We've got a game tomorrow. I need to play.
Yeah.
He's like, your swelling is too big. It's too big. I need you to get the swelling down. No, Doc, let's do it right now.
Yeah.
And he looked at me serious and said, have you ever been hypnotized?
Okay.
And that's not what you expect a doctor to say to you, right?
Was this a doctor in East Tennessee? Because if so, this could make some real sense. Because that's kind of where the opioid epidemic started.
Right?
I just want to throw that out there.
So I told him, no. He was like, well, if you want me to set it, I want to try something with you. And I'm going to, set your nose and I'm going to take your headache away. Okay, let's do it.
Yeah.
He leans me back. He starts talking to me, just nice and easy talking. And then the next thing I know is I can feel my headache rescinding away.
Oh, cool.
I was like, oh, well, this is actually working.
I'll take that.
I know, right? So he keeps talking to me and he says, you're going to feel just a little bit of a sting. And he put a numbing agent in my nose. And then he puts me in a headlock. He takes his thumb and he hits his thumb against my nose to set it. And I didn't feel a thing.
Oh, wow.
Didn't feel a thing. I knew he was doing it, but it didn't hurt.
Yeah.
Maybe that was part of the numbing agent. I don't know. Probably.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah. And then he sits me up and he goes, just sit here for a minute and then you're good to go. And my nose was straightened.
It's pointing the correct direction.
It is pointing the correct direction. Yes, it is. So I leave the doc's office. I have to wear one of those fantastic face masks. And we finish out the season. We win. We go to the national tournament in Sioux City, Iowa.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
The cradle of civilization.
Yeah, you know. And we actually lose our first game.
Okay.
And so we're out. We're done.
Quick trip.
Very quick trip, you know. So we take that summer, and our team just essentially, we work out, we run, and we come back start of redshirt senior year, and our team is good.
Yeah.
Our team is real good. Easily a top three team that I play on. Now, the only thing is that I'm the starting center.
Okay.
And I'm 5'10". I'm not that tall.
So the center is the one who hands the ball to the quarterback,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's exactly right. Okay. Yeah.
I just want to make sure I'm following.
So in our league, I'm the shortest starting center.
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody else that's a starting center is at least 6 foot. So I'm short. But because our team is so good and we work together and we were pretty much jacked and in shape, we beat everybody.
That's cool.
I mean, we beat everybody in our conference. I don't know if our school had ever went perfect through conference. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. But we went perfect through conference, and the second place team we beat by 25 points.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we win regular season conference, go through conference tournament, and we win. And we're nationally ranked. We're getting all these, this recognition. We're getting all these awards and everything. Like, our team is just real good.
Yeah.
And in the championship game of our conference tournament, I got to live out every athlete's dream of
you killed a
hitting, no, of hitting your free throws at the end of the game to win the game.
Oh, how cool.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So every athlete dreams of that, catching the ball to score the touchdown, the winning touchdown, hitting the game-winning shot. Like, every athlete dreams that. That's what they work towards. And I got to experience that, and we win, and we get to go to the national tournament again. We actually win our first game,
okay,
which I don't think our school had ever done.
Very cool.
And then we play the next round, the eventual national champions, and we lose.
Okay.
Okay.
So we finished. The team you want to lose to.
Yeah, right. And that is the team you want to lose to, yeah. And I think we finished like 12th or 13th in the nation or something like that. So, you know, I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I'll take that, you know. But basketball's over.
Mm-hmm.
It's done.
And this has been like an identity thing for you since sixth grade.
It had been my life, essentially, you know. But at the same time, I realized that there was no way that I could do that by myself.
Yeah.
There was no way that my teammates and I could have done any of that without that blessing of God. Mm-hmm. And so I always relate that to my walk with God. If I didn't know what the outcome was going to be through my basketball journey. Yeah. I didn't know that at the end of it, I was going to have these championship rings and these awards and all this kind of stuff and get to live out the athlete's dream. I didn't know that was going to be the end.
Yeah.
And I stuck with it through all the surgeries, all the injuries, the blood, sweat, and tears, the early mornings that I didn't want to do, mm-hmm. the late nights that I didn't want to do, through all of that. And I still stayed on that journey for an outcome I didn't know that was going to happen.
Yeah.
But like with my walk with God, I know what the outcome is. So why can't I continue on that journey, right?
Why is it hard to stick with it?
Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I can do that journey of basketball, I can do that journey with God.
Absolutely.
And so no one is going to be able to sway me off that journey because of that. And so, you know,
like offer an invitation now? Because I feel like that's what we're going
right.
next today.
Right. But it was when I was in college that super conservative COC mindset started to slip away because, you know, you're out in the country in these really, really small towns that they don't care what you look like. They don't care that you're dressed up.
Yeah.
You know, they're just really glad that you're there.
Yeah.
And they talk about things that I would have never dared spoken of in, you know, my church back home. I would have never revealed any of that. And they didn't care. They talked about it, you know, open, and they talked about grace and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, oh, well, maybe this way of thinking is better than kind of how I grew up. You know, I can remember back when I was in, I think it was in middle school or high school, one of those, I came to Wednesday night Bible study in my basketball sweats from a makeup game. And I can remember being stared at.
Yeah.
You know, people wonder, why is she dressed like that?
And the message you get is, we would rather you not be here than you be here and not meet our expectations.
Yeah. And going to the COC church in college, they didn't care.
Yeah.
They were so glad that I was there. They were so glad to see me, that I had made it after a terrible basketball practice. I would still go.
Yeah.
And they were so glad to see me. And so I was like, maybe this is better.
Have you seen the thing that's been going around Facebook lately? It's written from an AA guy's perspective. And he talks about what it was like to show up late to an AA meeting versus what it was like to show up to a church.
Oh.
And I mean, it's a pretty long little blurb. It got shared like crazy around the holidays. And the gist was, he said, when I show up late to an AA meeting, everybody there realizes I nearly didn't come. And they encouraged me because they knew that must mean I was fighting a battle that day. Right. He said, when I showed up late to church, everybody glared at me and said, why are you late? Mm-hmm. And he said, there's the picture of what church is supposed to be, that the AA meeting. It's one of the reasons I'm glad we've got the AA stuff going on. I think AA stuff around a church is good training for the church on how to be the church.
Yeah.
But don't tell me when I said that. That's a sneaky motivation behind.
And so, like, I have to fight that conservative COC way of thinking a lot. So, like, when people ask me questions, I have to stop and think it through. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know what? Let me get back to you on this. Let me think this. Let me do a little bit of research and let me get back to you, because I don't want to give that
knee-jerk answer.
Yes, and it be the wrong thing that that person needs to hear, you know?
In my story growing up, and you know, I have no hate for any of that. Some of the people who taught me these things are people that I love and respect so very much. But like I agreed with what I learned because it made sense. I mean, anything makes sense when it's what's being taught to you, because you teach it in a way that makes sense.
Right.
Like, you know, you can teach anything. But I remembered when we would talk about like divorce in particular. Divorce, ultimately, if you got remarried and we didn't like your remarriage, kind of became the unforgivable sin. And I remembered, like, I saw the logic that got us to that place, but I always had a sense of, something's off here. But like, I repeated that stuff. I taught that stuff until some things happened that jarred you out of it. Well, I was trying to decide whether I'd tell this part of the story or not. But I remember when Matthew Winkler was shot by his wife, one of my friends, you know, one of those guys that we'd stay up late in the dorm arguing theology and Bible and that stuff that you can only do when you're a nerd at Fried Hardeman. You know, it's the seminary thing. He looked at me and said, you realize that she would be more welcome in our church after murdering him than divorcing him and marrying the wrong person. And that sentence was 100% true. Like, we understood repentance to mean you made it all right. Well, you can't do that for murder, so all she has to do is say, I'm sorry. But if she had divorced him, if we didn't like her reason for divorce, and if she married someone else, we would say that repentance means she had to get unmarried and go back to him, which, by the way, Deuteronomy 24 explicitly prohibits, whatever. And that was one of those moments for me that was, oh, something about my theology. I need to go back to the drawing board on some of this stuff.
Yeah, and I have to stop myself and think it through.
Yeah.
So that was eye-opening in college.
So I know this probably isn't the point where we're trying to go at all, but deconstruction is a thing that gets talked about a ton. If you're on any social media, you'll see all this stuff about deconstruction. And what's funny is you'll see these people who are ex-evangelical is kind of the new name for formerly evangelical. There's a big documentary coming out about the religion business. I don't know if you've seen ads pop up about it, and it's basically how much churches waste money on themselves and don't do good in the world. And if we had all the budgets of churches, we could solve all the world's problems, which there's a degree of truth to some of that, but also it's really horribly misleading in some key ways too. But the point of all that is, you see these people who are ex-evangelicals and deconstructing, and a lot of people are rejecting where they grew up and throwing out the baby and the bathwater and giving up on Christianity. And what I want to do is I want to love and appreciate the things that I was taught growing up. I was taught to search for Scripture. I was taught that Scripture was authoritative. I was taught that we should do things if we believe they're right, even if everyone in the universe thinks you're crazy for doing
them. Right.
I don't want to throw that away. I do want to throw away some of those places where I think we misapplied or we were unfair in our... In some of those places, we were judgmental of people because their sin looked different than ours, not because it was sin. So, you know, trying to figure out how to have... I want to do a sermon someday on healthy deconstruction. You know, how do you learn to not judge somebody for being late to church, but not give up on the whole package? I rambled.
Very fun.
I hung around preachers this morning, so like it's it's been in my head all day.
You're good.
Nothing bad. Nothing good coming.
I mean, I'd be here for that lesson.
Well, we'll see. You know.
Yeah.
So tell me kind of more what this process in your faith looks like. So it sounds like college, you got to experience a new version of church, not radically new, but subtle.
Love.
Yeah.
It was more of everything coming out for love instead of the fear aspect is what it kind of felt like, you know, because in middle school and college, I was terrified to do things.
Yeah.
You know, it was, you know, beat into our head not to do this, 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 and this. And so, like, I didn't do those things because I was scared to do it, you know.
If you had a sip of alcohol, what would you do if Jesus came back and saw you? You would go to hell. Mm-hmm. That was the sermon.
Right.
You could not dance because what if you were dancing when Jesus came back? You would go to hell. Mm-hmm. I remember a lesson, and it's a dude that I love so much. He's a good guy, but I'm still cringe. I need to probably call him and just have a conversation about this because I'm curious if he's changed anything. I remember him coming and speaking to the youth group and talking about someone who had a heart attack during prom and would you want to meet Jesus like that? And I know his intentions were good, but the fear tactic thing and like the implication that this kid went to hell, I can't abide those two things anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't go to prom, but
you
it wasn't
anybody
because...
would go with me? That's fine.
But it wasn't because I was scared to. It was because I had a basketball game.
Right.
So, you know, I didn't do that. But, you know, I also didn't go to all the wild, crazy parties. You know, I didn't hang out. You know, I didn't have the boyfriends. I didn't want the boyfriend, though, because it interfered with basketball. I was so basketball
life
sports
was better
minded.
For it.
It probably was. You know, I was
wish
so
we could slow the roll on all the dating in high school.
Yeah, I was so sports minded that I just didn't care about that.
Yeah.
So I think that was probably also a blessing. Didn't have to worry about that until good old Daniel came along. You know.
Oh, Daniel. So we can talk about him? Is this part of the story?
We can talk about him. Yeah. Let's see. Daniel and I are the product of Match.com.
Did he get a refund or did you?
No, neither one of us got the refund.
Did you know that for a while there was a dating site called YouCanDoBetter.com?
No, I did not. Yeah.
There was a couple at church. They wouldn't tell me what dating site they came
from.
And so we Googled the worst dating sites. There was like Farmers Only and JDate for Jewish people.
Yeah.
And one of them was called YouCanDoBetter.com. And you had to upload a picture of both of you. And I think this may have all been a joke thing. Like, I'm sure it was. But, and people would vote on which one of you could do better. And that's the one who got to be in the website. And they got matched.
My goodness.
I'm sure it was a giant joke. But
I hope
like,
so.
That
but
is
that's funny.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I wish I'd come up with that.
I tell Daniel this all the time because, well, it's true. I saw his picture online and it was this giant blonde-headed guy standing beside this Mustang, and his Mustang is what caught my eye. And I was like, ooh, I'd really like this Mustang. I said, I hope it's his. And so I just, you know, liked his picture, and then the next thing you know, here comes a conversation of emails and then text messages, and learned that he was working in San Antonio. He had an apartment in Nashville, but his job sent him to San Antonio, and he only got to come home one weekend a month. Mm. So I agreed to go on a date with him when he came home next, which just so happened to also be my birthday weekend.
Okay.
So we, you know, had a couple of dates, and then he asked me if I would make it official and be his girlfriend, and I told him no.
Poor Daniel.
So mean to him. I told him not to give up, though.
Did you give him a participation trophy or like what?
No.
You
know? I don't actually believe in those. So,
yeah, I know that.
No, I just told him not to give up. And so we spent the next month just essentially talking, getting to know each other better. And then when he came home the next month, he asked me again and I said yes. And so for the first six months of our relationship, we got to see each other one weekend a month.
Okay.
So we really got to know each other.
Yeah.
You know, what we wanted out of life, what we didn't want, you know. And at that time, Daniel was not a Christian. And so he would, you know, I sent him like books and stuff for him to, you know, do some research in with scripture and everything. And then he called me one day and he was like, when I come home, you know, next month, I want to be baptized. Mm-hmm. And so that was probably one of the best days hear that. And so when he came back home the next month, he was baptized. And then if he ever does this, he can tell the rest of his story.
Yeah.
And that moment there just kind of solidified it for me that he's probably the one.
Yeah.
You know, I think this guy's really good and, you know, we're long distance dating and he's not giving up on me. I'm not giving up on him, yeah. You know? And so he finally got a different job and it brought him back home and everything. And then, I think it was about a year and a handful of months later, we were in Chicago and he did two things that I absolutely hate. I hate hot dogs and he had me eat a Chicago dog and then he put me on the Ferris wheel at Navy Pier and I hate Ferris wheels. I hate them. I do not like them at all. So as we are in this Ferris wheel with this couple that's sitting like 2 feet away from us, he taps me on the shoulder because I'm not looking. I'm got my eyes closed, not paying attention. He taps me on the shoulder and there's a ring.
On the thing that you hate the
most?
On
the thing that I hate.
How have I never heard this story?
I don't know. But I looked at him and I went, seriously? And the couple that's sitting across from us are like screaming. And I'm just like, really? Seriously? And he was like, yeah, you want to marry me? And I was like, okay, sure.
I mean, like, what's the alternative? Pushing him out of the Ferris right. wheelchair. Like, he starts rocking it until right. you say yes.
So that's how he proposed.
Okay.
I said yes. And then 3 months later, we got married.
Fall Creek Falls. I remember this.
Fall Creek Falls. Yes. We did Fall Creek Falls. There were like 8 people there. That's it.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's how to do weddings.
It is how to do weddings. And then later we had, you know, a big group come and like celebrate with us and everything later.
Nice reception party thing.
Yeah. So then Daniel and I are kind of trying to figure out life because I wanted to do physical therapy. Mm-hmm. That was part of my degree. That's what I wanted to do. Obviously, it makes sense since I was in the physical therapy office.
You had a lot of training.
Yes, had a lot of training. Didn't work out though.
Okay.
Wasn't what I was meant to do. Mm-hmm. And I realized that after having kids.
Yeah.
As much as I wanted to do it, as much as I loved that aspect, it was not what I was meant to do. So I stopped trying to get into school. Mm-hmm. And my aunt said, hey, I know of a place that you can, you know, your abilities and talents will be put to good use. And so next thing I know is I'm applying to Sarah Cannon Research okay. Institute, and here we are trying to cure cancer.
Would you like hurry up and finish that?
I know, right? I mean, it's such a long process.
Excuses.
I mean,
that's all
you'd think that we'd figure it out by now, but
seriously.
So started that job, and then Daniel and I, we actually moved here to Dixon in 2015, And I think it was one Sunday we woke up late.
Yeah.
And we were like, well, let's just find the nearest church. And it just happened to be Burns. And so we, you know, stroll in here and meet you and Leslie.
Yes, sorry
and
about that.
I think y'all like invited us to lunch and we agreed. I don't know why, but we did.
Bad choices.
And I do remember you saying this to me. You said, I want you to go and visit all the other churches in Dixon.
Yeah.
You'll be back, is what you said.
That's a little gutsier than I've usually been on that speech. But. Yeah.
So we did. Yeah. We went around and we visited a few of the churches and everything. And sadly, as I don't want to say this to your face.
Hang on.
You were right.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah. And we've been here ever since.
Yeah. Well, you guys were just a good fit here, and it was pretty obvious. But and I do tell, like I tell visitors all the time, I want you to try places because mm-hmm. I want you to find what works for you.
Yeah.
I'm not into trying to talk people into coming to church with me.
Yeah, right.
There's plenty of seats in the county, and not every person is a fit at every place. I get that. And that's okay. Sometimes I think we've thought that's, I mean, the church, the body of Christ is for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be a church that shuts our doors to anyone.
Right.
Like, I believe both of those things. But at the same time, churches have different personalities and different flavors and mm-hmm. different constituencies. If it was true about individual members in Romans 12, 1 Corinthians 12, I think by extension, maybe that's the transitive property or something. I don't know. You know, like I think it applies to congregations too. Each one
right.
has. And there are a lot of good congregations in the world that I would never fit at. For years, people would say, aren't you hoping you get a job at Walnut Street someday? Because like bigger churches are viewed as more prestigious or better. Mm-hmm. Well, they pay better usually.
Mm-hmm.
And people would get so confused when my answer is no. And right. that's not because I don't like them. I wouldn't fit there. I'm
right.
not the guy for that job.
Right.
You know, I think that's just true all the way up and down through a church.
Yeah. I'm not super hip on the big, huge churches. I feel like you kind of can get lost in the crowd. So that's not really my thing anyway. Mm-hmm. I prefer the smaller. I mean, when I was in college, I went to a church and there was literally 15 people. So,
I mean, mine in college was
fine.
Like 35.
Yeah.
So. Love it. But, you know, the thing I've again come to love and appreciate is those little churches, really good things happen.
Really good.
But even those big ones, yeah, you can get lost in the crowd. But there's some people, that's exactly what they need right now.
It is. Yeah.
You know, and there's some stuff that they can do at scale that we can't do. It's weird to me that Burns is now literally in the category of big church.
Wow.
Based on where people kind of divide churches into size buckets. Yeah. We're a large church now, and that's super weird.
It is.
Just super weird.
Yeah, because it wasn't when we first started going here. Yeah, and so I guess we went 4 or 5 years essentially doing whatever we could, whatever was needed, helping out Carolyn teach.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that I knew my Bible.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I started teaching that I was like, you know what? Maybe I'm not as good as I thought I was.
That's why we ask people to teach.
And,
you know, it's
you know,
good for you.
Yes, it is. And you know when you do those you do those trivia nights?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm actually decent at it now because of helping Carolyn teach.
Yeah.
And running the game section for so long that I, you know, remember that now. And I'm like, you know what? I'm better at my Bible now mm-hmm. because of that. So we did whatever essentially was needed for 4 or 5 years. But during those 4 or 5 years, you know, we were also trying to get pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And it took us that long. We thought that it was because of my pelvis. Turned out it wasn't. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't meant to be.
Yeah.
It wasn't the right time. And so we had stopped. We had stopped trying. We were like, you know what? We're going to go buy a side-by-side. We're going to go have fun. And the next month, I wound up pregnant. I think I texted your wife at like 3 a.m. I think that's what it was. I think I was laying on the bathroom floor
yeah.
trying not to pass out with the pregnancy test, and I text your wife. I think it was a gif of Sheldon Cooper breathing through a brown paper sack. I think that's what it was.
I've seen that gif.
Yeah. And then I left the test on the counter, and I went back to bed, and Daniel woke up 2 hours later. He went into the bathroom, and he saw it, and he came back out. What is this? What does this mean? Well, what do you think it means? He's like, are we pregnant? And I was like, yes, babe, that's what that means. So he comes and sits down on the bed beside me, and he just kind of sits there and stares at it. And then he looks at me, and he goes, all right, then. And he gives me a high five, and then he goes and gets ready for work.
So some things have never changed.
No.
That's amazing. Oh, that's so good.
And so that's how we found out that we were pregnant with Ty. We did not know the gender. We decided not to find out.
That's right.
And he was a surprise. I'd wanted a boy. I was terrified of girls. I was so scared that I was going to have this girly girl who only wanted to do princess and pink. And that's not me. Like, I don't.
That's really more Dan's territory.
Yeah, probably. But we wound up having a boy. Had to do C-section because of my pelvis and everything. They didn't want it to refracture or explode. Do anything, you know. Yeah, explode. And so Ty Man came in 2020 during COVID. And then 2 years later, we found out we're having another one. Mm-hmm. And it turned out to be a girl. We did find out the gender on this one.
And we had time to get prepared.
Yeah. I did need the time to get prepared because when they told me that it was a girl, I literally, my heart started racing and I had a mini panic attack.
Yeah.
To the point where when they took my blood pressure and everything, it stayed elevated for a few visits and they like were watching it and they like kept reminding me. And I was like, I promise you, just let me process the fact that I'm having a little girl and my blood pressure will go down. Yeah. I promise you. And that's what had happened. But then we got Harper. Mm. And I hope she's my UT baby, seeing as how she's my Harper Knox. You know, so it'd be kind of funny if she wasn't, but
yeah. She's going to be a Vandy fan.
Bless it. But I think she's going to be my athlete. I do. Her picking up balls and throwing them already at one. I think she's.
And she already throws better than I do. But yeah, that she does. Say a whole lot.
She does. Yeah. But then here we are.
Yeah.
You know,
it's been a ride, hasn't it?
It has been a ride.
It's funny when you talked about the pregnancy test on the bathroom counter. I think about since COVID, the number of times someone has, you know, pre-COVID, occasionally I got a picture of a pregnancy test as an announcement.
Mm-hmm.
Post-COVID, I get pictures of COVID tests.
Oh, my goodness.
And they, you know, they sort of look alike because, you know, you're looking for, are there going to be two little lines on this thing mm-hmm. or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so like, I got one a couple weeks ago from someone and my first thought was, she's in her 60s. It's not a baby. Like, it took me just a second to figure out what was going on
that's
that
great.
One. But my, how the world changes.
Great. Oh, man, that's so funny.
Well, this has been fun.
Yeah.
I have new things I can be mean to Dan about. And that's really the point of this podcast.
Oh, to find blackmail my husband?
Yeah, that for 60-something episodes now, it's all been a front for how
you know, I will have to say that every time you're up in the pulpit and you say you're cute, babe, it just makes me smile.
I do that just for Dan and you.
I know, I love it.
If you don't know what she's talking about, when Dan or anyone says something a little silly, shall we say,
her
response is something to the effect of,
you're cute,
good thing
babe.
You're cute, babe,
yeah.
or something like
you're
that.
You're cute, babe.
So, well, with that in mind, do you have anything else you want to share today?
No, I think I'm good.
Well, I feel like I know the right way to end this podcast. Just to all our listeners, I want you to know that you're cute, babe.
You're cute, babe.
Well, this has been fun. You know, you never know how God's going to work through your world of sports and 4 knee surgeries, a car wreck, 5 knee surgeries. Six, I lost count. I was keep a tally marks on my little notes.
Oh,
here.
I did have 5. I didn't mention the 5th one.
Yeah, you missed that one.
I had another one my senior redshirt senior year, but it only had like a 2-week recovery. Okay. It wasn't really anything super bad.
5.
So 5, yeah.
I've updated my tally sheet now. Well, it's just neat to see what God can do.
Yeah, it is.
Well, friends, you know where to catch us. We'll be back next Tuesday for another one of these fun little adventures. Thanks for listening and thanks for sharing with a friend. Until next time, we can't wait to see what God does in your story.
Thanks for listening to Rough Drafts. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. While you're at it, help us spread the word by leaving a rating and review. Until next time, let's keep looking for how God writes His love into our stories.